Hi, I'm Doreen Howard. I'm with the Lansing Fisher Body Oral History Team. The date is August 11th, 2005. The time is 9:55 a.m. The location is Local 602, the office of Art Luna. The reason that we're here today is to interview Art for the history project. I will go around the room and everyone can introduce themselves at this time.
Beginning with myself. Hi, I'm Art Luna, President of UAW Local 602.
John Federweb, part of the Fisher Body Historical Team.
Cheryl McQuaid.
Jerry Smith.
Linda Johnson.
Hi, I'm Mike Fleming. I am the Civil Rights Chairperson for Local 602.
Marilyn Coulter.
And Doug Rademacher.
Okay. Let's start with our biographical sheet on Art. Like I said, we're speaking with Art Luna, Local 602 president. Just for reference, we need you to state your name and address.
Art Luna, president, Local 602, 2510 West Michigan Avenue, Lansing, Michigan, 48917.
Okay. And your gender?
I'm a male.
National origin?
I'm of Hispanic descent.
And educational level?
I graduated from high school, took 2 years of college.
Okay. And do you have any military service?
No, I do not.
Okay. On your sheet, it shows that you have several organizations and volunteer activities listed. United Way Hospice, Clothing Bank, Charlotte School Board, Blue Ribbon Campaign, Boys Girls Club, and the Highfields, etc. Let's start out with your first day at Fisher Body. Could you tell me a little bit about the day that you hired in, and including your hiring date?
Okay, well, first day I hired in was May 18th of 1981. As anybody would be going into a large facility like that, it is a scary day because you want to make sure that you don't mess up. You want to be able to work with whatever co-workers you have and working with. So I was nervous. I was quite nervous, but seems to be in that facility. Going in, everybody was very cordial, very polite, nice to me. And, you know that when you're part of the team is when they start playing practical jokes on you. So the first day was exciting, but a little nerve-wracking, making sure that I didn't mess up so that I wouldn't have someone else having to do my job for me.
At that time, did they have new hire orientation programs for the people coming in?
From my recollection, when I hired in, I went through the physical process, and then there was no orientation. They brought you in, gave you a couple of days to work, to practice on what you're doing before they let you, released you to let you do the job.
Okay. Tell me a bit about that very first day when you had to actually start doing the physical work.
Okay, the first day where I was in the body shop in the booth, solder booth, and using a torch, you're heating up the job, taking the primer off and putting the solder on to do the seams. It wasn't a bad job, it was a good job, just you had to know just the right temperature for the torch to flow that solder. You'd work with three guys on each side of the line, and it was quiet enough yet, the torch were loud enough that you would have to holler back and forth to communicate with them, but it was inside a booth, so you didn't get to see everybody walking outside in the walkways or the line coming off of the metal finish, but we were all a tight-knit group there.
Mm-hmm. Now, this booth, how large is this booth? And you said how many people were in there?
Okay, it's approximately 12 foot wide by, I'd say, 60 foot long. And what would happen, the car would come down the middle, and each person would have a station of the car to do, whether it be the front header, the T-post, or the back seam. And so we all had our jobs, you know, everybody, if somebody got behind, would help. But, you know, we always see each other, we're in the same room, so to speak, so we got along well.
Was there any protective clothing or anything like that that you had to wear to do your job in that specific booth?
Well, you know, you definitely had to have long sleeves on. We wore shop coats. We also wore, we didn't have to wear shields, but safety glasses. And they recommended steel-toed boots because once the solder fell, it hits your toe. You wanted to protect yourself from that. That was pretty much it. We had to scrape and make our own paddles. You know, put the tread in the paddle that would secure the solder. And that was part of it as well.
Mm-hmm. And being a new hire and coming into a booth like that with all the equipment and everything, was that a scary feeling? Or what was your personal feelings about that whole experience of in something new in that arena?
It wasn't so much scary as it just, I didn't want to mess up, you know, because you got that time span that you got to be there every day on time and that type of thing. But it really wasn't as scary as it was just wanting to do it right so that nobody would have to do it for you.
Okay. And you talked about the different types of protective clothing. You had a term, shop coat.
Yeah.
For those that may not know what that is, could you describe what a shop coat is?
A shop coat was a very thick, heavy coat you put on. It was quite thick, like maybe three times the thickness of a pair of jeans. And that was pretty much to protect you because you're working with metal, so if your hand or your arm rubbed on the metal of the car, it wouldn't cut it or cut you. You know, it's something that you button down so that you wouldn't get solder splattered on your own clothes and that type of thing. So it was just a protective clothing safety purposes.
What shift were you on?
Unfortunately, I started out on afternoons. So, you know, starting on afternoons, trying to start a family, raise a family, it was kind of hard at first, but you get used to it, especially when it comes to wanting to provide for your family.
So, and then how long did it take before you were able to go to another shift?
Before I had the opportunity to go to day shift, I must have worked there probably, 15 years.
Oh, so yeah. Quite a long time to...
Yeah, it was. And, you know, trying to get to the point where I could at least go to my kids' sports activities or school activities, you know, I'd have to take a vacation day, that type of thing. But, you know, I always could depend on my wife to secure the home front for that.
So you had a lot of outside help to make your work life a little easier for family life also. Let's see here. During your employment, did you ever have any time where you were laid off and did you have to deal with layoffs at any time?
Well, when I hired in 81, the first major layoff was, I believe, in the 85, 86 time frame. I signed up to work it. What our jobs when I signed up to work it was to go throughout the whole plant and tear the light bulbs off the lights and take the backing off and wash all of them and put them back on. You know, back then I had the work ethic that work is important, you know, to provide for your family. So instead of taking the layoff, I signed up to do that. And that was on day shift at that point in time as well, to do that. during the layoff because there was no production going on, so that was okay.
During that changeover, what did you actually physically do in the plant at that time? And for those who don't understand what a changeover is, can you go into a little bit more detail about that?
Well, what a changeover is it's a little bit different than it is now. Back then in the 80s, a changeover was the model run would stop. And between the time it stopped to the time it started, there would be model changes, whether it be a trim package, whether it be a new product line of the same carrier model. But it was basically a time where people would be laid off so they could make the necessary changes on whether it be fixtures, whether it be bringing material into the plant, those types of things, so that when the changeover time frame has ended, you could go back into building a product. It'd be a different style. Normally, it'd be during the model changeover, which would be, like, for example, from an 84 to an 85, just from year to year.
Okay. So did you ever have any kind of a break in your seniority at all then? You said you were never laid off?
No.
So you didn't ever have to deal with anything in that arena? Went from the time that you started to present, was there changes in wages or any type of benefits that you received that would be significantly impacted your life or family?
Well, you know, any change in benefit or wage system is because it had been negotiated by the UAW. And so, any time anybody gets an increase or a better benefit to their package, it's always a plus. It's always good to do that because that means you're progressing. You know, times change, so do benefit packages and wages. And I think it was important to do that. But I also think that that the reason that was done wasn't because of the generosity of the company, but it was because of the hard work of the negotiation process with the UAW.
Talking about the UAW, when did you start becoming active in your union, and what do you see for the future as the president of your local?
I first got started with the local in 1980. When I was asked to be on the Community Service Committee and work for the United Way campaign, which I was happy to do, as I've always wanted to be involved. And then back in 85, my name was put out for nomination for Elections Committee, which I was at that time surprised that I was voted into the Elections Committee, but that was good to do that. At that same time, I was asked to be on the Education Committee as well as the Workers' Comp and Employment Committee. So I got involved with those two committees as well. And as I extended my career with the plant, the more I did in my local union, knowing what they provide for me and my family, the more I wanted to do. And through the years, I've been successful becoming the cap chair for this local, the vice president, and now have the honor of being the president. Where do I go from here? There's a lot of things that we still need to be successful and move forward with. One is always striving to better serve, better communicate with our members. With what's going on now in the history of the UAW 602 as well as Lansing Car Assembly fading away, we look towards Delta, Lansing Delta Township, and we're trying to secure finalizing some things for a 4-acre parcel out there, which the plant's approximately 8 miles away from here. I don't believe that we can do our membership service by not being close to them, being 8 miles away. We can't service them like we'd like to. So we're trying to finalize some property as well as look to, from the community, not just the community, but the membership and the executive board, on direction on looking at building a new union hall out there. And that's something that isn't built too often anymore in this country, unfortunately. But I think that would be a great accomplishment for this local. I think it would be a great accomplishment for the executive board and administration of this building to move forward with.
Okay. You talked about several committees and that you had been a participant in over your UAW time span. Could you elaborate on a little more on some of these committees and maybe what some of the functions were of the different committees that you...
Well, I started out on the elections committee, and what that is just helping, working on elections here at the hall, for whether it be districts or whether it be the executive board, those types of elections. And a lot of that time, when they had an election, you'd come in and help run the election and count the ballots, and that's pretty much it with the elections committee. The other ones pertaining to community services, that was a big one because during my time in the community service committee, we'd go out and build ramps for seniors and handicapped people, and you could see that they were greatly appreciative of that. You do coat drives, blood drives, old newsboy, toys for tots, those types of programs that you knew that you were doing good things for the community. Unfortunately, not everybody works at a company that has a negotiated contract that you have a good wage package and benefit package. So sometimes we take for granted what we have and when we see people who don't have. And so I thought that was a very, very useful committee to be on, to know that we were trying to make a difference in somebody's life. Education committee, that was basically... back then, the chairman was Kevin Beard, and worked with Kevin Beard pertaining to trying to come up with educational programs. Unfortunately, I love my union, but I think the two things we don't do well enough that we need to continue to strive for is to educate and communicate. And that was a committee that, as a member of that committee, you gave your input, but the direction was given by the chairman and the president. Of the local at that time. So is there room for improvement? There's always room for improvement no matter what you do. The Workers' Comp and Employment Committee, that was basically a committee where you help with the workers' compensation issues as well as layoff issues, people getting laid off. Jerry Taylor was the chair at that time. He asked me to come on board and work with him, and I learned a lot from that pertaining to workers' comp issues, pertaining to unemployment issues, to better ways to serve our members with those. The other issues or the other committees I've been on is I was on the Civil Rights Committee for about 2 years, and I was on the, I chaired the CAP committee, which was the political arm of Local 602, and that position was to inform and educate the workforce on issues going on not just in Washington but here in Lansing, trying to have some type of communicative relationship with those that didn't support our issues on the Republican side and keeping a good communication with those that did on the Democratic side. And I love, if I was just sitting here and tell you my first love is politics, that's what it is. Because I believe that's where all the decisions are made. And that's why it's important that we stay involved with that. But, those are the committees I've been on. And it's a good learn. It's a good learning curve because you learn a lot, different sides of what's going on. And I think that's helped me mold myself to help and make decisions at this level, the benefit of our membership.
Take a break.
No.
Cheryl says no. I would like to know a little bit more about your role as the president of the local, and if you could describe what you feel is one of the most important contributions that you have made personally to the UAW.
The roles and responsibility under the Constitution of the International Union is to administer the hall. But I truly believe it goes deeper than that. I think a part of that is the public relations that the president plays for this local, not just within the walls of the plant or of the local, but out in the communities. That means being accessible to the media. That means attending every function possible, wearing the UAW wheel to let them know the UAW is around. That means speaking engagements. That means doing things with the Democratic Party and the processes that play into that role. And I think that's very important. And it's not just to promote the position of the president, it's to promote the local and the membership. And that's the very important part of this, because not one individual can do it alone. It's everybody working together. That's what makes the UAW as successful as it's been in all these years. I guess the hardest part of this job is the commitment of being away from your family a lot. It's, sorry guys. It's a commitment of putting your family aside because you've got another family. Because you really do. And I take that very seriously, as a lot of other members do as well. But you're out there a lot. You don't get to go with your family here, or you plan a vacation and something comes up. You want to make sure that, that things are taken care of. For example, my daughter could have gone. She went to Florida a couple weeks ago to a national softball tournament. And she'd never been before, and neither had my wife. And I would have liked to have gone to that, but unfortunately I was directed by the regional director to take some training. And unfortunately, when the regional director calls upon you to do those type of things, you need to be there, especially if somewhere down the road it benefits the local. Because, you know, you always want to look out for what... We may have a favor from the regional director. We may have a favor from Richard Shoemaker's office or something like that. Because that, you know, whether that plays that's playing politics or not, I think that's an important part to know that we do, as a local, have something in our back pocket if we need to use it. But you know, that's probably the hardest part of this job isn't that it's in the limelight all the time. It's taking complaints because. The districts or the shop committee isn't doing their job, and a lot of our members don't know the proper protocol where to go. I'm the first one they call when they don't get their unemployment check, when they don't get their, you know, when a retiree wonders when they get their Bible, to simple things like why do we have to pay taxes out to Delaware Township if our plant's not in Delaware Township? You know, I'm... on a regular basis now, having meetings with Joe Drillette from the Delaware Township staff. Until we made our endorsement, I met on various times with the mayor's office on issues pertaining to GM, and I've met with the governor's office four or five times in the last year. And these are things that a president does. Unfortunately, when there is a time when the president needs to talk to somebody, and I've started being better at this, I call Doug, where any other for example, the chairman has his whole shop committee to go to. I don't have a whole lot of people that I can go to. And I'm still trying to weed that out in my mind, how to do that and get the help of self. Art, you can't do it all yourself because it's impossible. But those are some of the roles the president plays. But the most important one is when the member or the retiree has a concern, if you need to use the authority and the position to get it done, then you do.
Mm-hmm. What do you feel is your most memorable moment as a UAW member?
The most memorable moment for me as a UAW member, probably be you would think it'd be being elected to president, you would think it'd be the vice president position, you think it'd be the cap position. But to me, I think the most memorable moment would be getting the Cesar Chavez Award, because of the fact that you know, I'm the chairman of the Capitol Cesar Chavez Commission now, and you know, I've learned of what he does with the labor movement of the United Farm Workers when he was alive, and he done that, and knowing his commitment he made and put his own life on the line numerous times and fast and those types of things, that to be, I guess, just to be recognized that. That to get that humanitarian award, that, well, made me proud to know that, well, I'm doing something that benefits people, that helps people. And I think that would probably be something that also gave me that much more drive to continue to do what's right.
And this, the Cesar Chavez Award, is that something that is given out on an annual basis, or can you describe how often they give that out, and is what the criteria or any of the background on what the award is and what it represents?
The Cesar Chavez Humanitarian Award was an award that was developed by the Civil Rights Committee here at Local 602, and I believe that they've had 13 of these programs on a yearly basis, once a year. And the award was pretty much a recognition of the service that was provided, not just in the way that Cesar Chavez would like to see it done, but the way of the actions of the recipient of the award to serve the membership. And the Civil Rights Committee had decided to do that as a humanitarian award, and that is an award that is given by your peers. Of, they must have felt that I've done a good job to offer me that opportunity to give me that award, and I thought that was very special. You know, it's something that my family came to. Something that a lot of the Hispanic Latino community came to, and it was just nice to know that sometimes when you do things out there and you don't know if it's the right thing, or you feel it's the right thing, but you don't know, you never know until you're recognized. So
that's very nice. I want to go back and talk a little bit more about family. You talked about the big importance of family, not only your own family, but the family of the membership. Give me some idea of what that family life is like inside the plant. What's some of the culture of the plant, and why would you consider employees as family?
Okay, well, first of all, you're probably in a plant working next to somebody more than you see somebody in your everyday family life. Because the kid's going to school, the wife, the spouse working, you having to do, I have to do my chores, the spouse have to do their chores, those types of things. The reason that I believe in the plant that you have a family is because you see them just as much or even more than you do your own. And with that in mind, you get to become real close and have a lot of friends and have tight relationships inside that plant. You always hear of when retirees retire, they don't miss the plant, but they miss the people. Mm-hmm. And so you always, me sitting next to John or working with John and Doug, or you, every day of the week, 5 days a week, 6 days a week, 300-something days a year, you grow that tightness and that bond that if you got a problem at home, you can share it with your co-worker. Just maybe they've been in the same situation. Because they share their thoughts with you, you share your thoughts with them, and you know when their birthday is, when their anniversary is, and vice versa. And you get to a relationship where you create bonds. Sometimes after work you go out and have a beer with somebody, or you decide to have a cookout and invite their family over. And so that's what I mean by, this is a second family. This is my second family because we have a lot of great people in our local. They're fantastic, whether they have a different cultural way of themselves than myself. That's not the point. The point is that we're here to help each other, to work together, and there's always a learning curve. And any time we can get in and start communicating better, working better, it builds the local through the foundation what the local was made for. Mm-hmm.
As far as the culture of the workplace, was there dinners or other activities within the group? You said you worked in the body shop on the night shift. What were some of the activities that you did while you were on the night shift that helped some of the camaraderie and family bonding that you are describing?
Okay, well, a lot of times, we'd get together and basically we'd order together our lunches, like pizzas through DeLuca's and stuff like that. But the bigger part of that was during the holiday time. The holiday time when most of the time it's supposed to be being with family. Well, everybody would bring in a dish to pass in your department. Normally the management or the supervisor team would purchase the meat. And just, doing that, once in a while we'd have somebody bring in breakfast burritos, that type of thing, and they'd share them. We know it was a cost to them, so people would throw money in, but normally, most of the time, those individuals wouldn't take the money because, you don't charge your child for renting a room from you because it's your child. And I think those festivities that we had of dinners, of sometimes birthdays where we'd bring cakes and to celebrate somebody's birthday, those were times that you could tell that, hey, this group really means a lot to each other because they wouldn't be doing that otherwise. And, as far as the culture part of that is during the dinners and stuff, you'd have somebody bring in a dish from their ethnic background, whether it be Hispanic, whether it be soul food, whether it be Asian food. And there was time to sample those when you don't normally get that opportunity to do that. So that was a part of the whole festival thing of gathering for dinners, gathering for celebrations of birthday parties, let alone celebrations of accomplishments that the plant has done.
What's your most memorable moment at Fisher Bodies in the plant?
My most memorable moment at Fisher Body as an employee. probably would be the first prank that was played on me, because normally, in my opinion, you're not part of the team yet until you've been pranked. There's been a prank played on. And like I said, I would start out in the torch in the solder booth, and you have these torches that flames shoot out 2 feet. And it's easy for somebody, with all the torch noise going on, it's easy for somebody to stand next to you with a torch down by your feet, you know, and you get hot feet that way. You get a good hot foot. You know, another situation would be where you always had to heat the primer and then wipe it down. Well, a lot of guys, since I was at the end of the booth, a lot of guys would put the rags in the car and turn and get them going, so by the time they got down to me, they were smoking. Well, you know, that was a good prank that was played, but we didn't ever, because between the solder booth and the grinder booth, there was a gap that was outside the booths, and we didn't ever want them rags to go out there and show management that were in there playing around a little bit. So we, it was my job to take that rag out and try to dispose of it or get it from quit smoking so that management would know that we're doing that inside the booth.
That's great. What type of pranks did you pull on other people?
The most memorable one? I don't know if you all remember a gentleman named Spider-Man. The body shop. He was an older gentleman that worked sanitation. The reason they call him Spider-Man is because he had a hat on and it had a rubber spider on it. Well, he would always come by and collect all the empty cans, you know, so that he could have some extra money. Well, we decided to put a couple cans out and put some fish light on them and get around the corner, so when he'd bend down to pick the can up, we'd pull the wire so he couldn't get the can, you know. So was that mean? It was probably mean, but it was a nice prank to play. You know, I'd do the same as the others, because once we learned one job, we'd learn the others in the booth. So I'd pull the same pranks as far as the torching of the toe or the burning of the rag and having to go down the line. But normally I didn't do that. My philosophy is don't do something that you wouldn't want done to you. And although I got along with the guys, you know, I was there to do a job.
Tell me a little bit about the camaraderie amongst your group in the solder booth.
During the, you know, everybody would... We'd have to make our own paddles, so we'd take turns making each other's paddles, because we got to the point where we knew what everybody liked and how they liked their paddle. But, you know, the more of the camaraderie was outside of the plant when, during the union picnics, we'd play softball as a team, you know, and we'd got into some other tournaments outside of just the picnic. And then we'd play in these tournaments, and, you know, and that was good just to get away. You know, to play them, you know, we'd naturally there'd be between games, beverages and stuff. But there'd also be family members there, so that we could meet each other's family and get to know them as well.
Okay. Talking about family, do you have any other family members that are working in the plant or are part of General Motors or? Union activities like you're involved in?
When I was a younger kid, when I was a young lad, I would drive by the plant probably every other Sunday. My grandparents lived on Iona Street, just down here in the West Side neighborhood. So I'd always see that plant. My grandfather worked in this facility. I'm third generation GM employee. My grandfather worked here. My father worked in the chassis side and paint repair all his life. And I'm third generation, like I said. I think what made it special working here is that my grandfather worked here. As far as any other members of my family involved in the union aspect of it, they... they come to the picnic. I tried bringing my wife to a lot of functions. Unfortunately, she doesn't like it when I come into a room and I like shaking hands and talking to people, politic they call it. And sometimes when I'm doing that, I forget where she's at. So she's sometimes left in the corner. So we have our differences there. But more so, she's very supportive. And it's not always the part of a spouse or family having to be at every function. I think it's more so the support of allowing me to be as flexible as I am with my time to not be home. And they understand the importance of the union functions and everything I'm involved in, that they understand it. And my wife has been the foundation of that whole process.
I'd like to go back and touch on the generations that have worked at the plant.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that affected... How do you think that affected you as far as your plans for hiring in here? Did that affect your reasons for wanting to hire in? Were you on a different path before hiring in here? And then because of generational family ties to the plant that drew you to come here to look for employment? Or is it because you were riding your bike up and down and you just loved the plant, the way it looked, and wanted to get in there and hear those machines and work with some of the machinery in there?
Okay.
Could you kind of go into a little bit more about that?
Right. When I first got out of high school, I hired into the SPO plant at Local 1753. 62 days later, I got fired because I had an idea. The department I worked in was called Joe's Junkyard, and that's where all the trucks would bring in the parts that weren't being used, and we'd have to separate them and put them in bins. And the reason I got fired is because I had an idea that I took to the supervisor pertaining to how to do it where it wouldn't be so much work on the employees doing it, but yet it would help them out as well. And I'd gone in the office and approached them on it, and some verbal discussion took place, and before I left the office, I was fired. So, but that was my first experience with GM. But I know that when my father worked at the clay factory in Grand Ledge and got hired into General Motors at the chassis side. But before that, we'd always have to work during school break, summer break, in the fields, picking pickles, topping onions, doing apples, those types of things. That's how we raised our monies as kids, to buy school clothes. And as he moved into the General Motors and got the good wages, got the good benefit package that the UAW provided, it was more of an issue of I need to provide for my family once I decide to get married and stuff like that. So I really didn't hire into GM until after I was married, about 4 years later. Before that, I worked at General Tire in Ionia, which was stamping plastic fiberglass parts for GMC trucks. And then from there I moved and was hired into Hastings Manufacturing, where I put together oil filters for product, and then went into the foundry and poured the air filter steel casings. And I applied at GM, knowing possibility of that not happening, because you've always heard once you get fired from GM, once you never come back. I took that chance and applied, and when they interviewed me pertaining to why I got fired, I told them. Next day they called me, told me to come in, and It was never a matter of whether I wanted to work here or not. It was a matter of trying to better my quality of living for my family.
We'll take a break.
Okay.